All right, Malachi, I brought you a mystery this morning. What do you think that sound is?
My guess is woodpeckers. Is it
Ooh,
woodpeck? Is
a
it?
good one. There are
Oh.
woodpeckers in the background there.
Oh, they.
That is the sound of the tap, tap,
Oh.
tap of maple sap in a bucket.
God, as soon as you say that is obvious. I was thinking, not that that's not a natural process. I was thinking living creatures for some reason. And
For some reason, you are on the Season Watch podcast.
the
That's
season
Malachi
watch,
Coons.
but
I'm Charlie
seasons,
Mitchell.
nice intro. Seasons are can be other things as well. I like that. So I've heard, Heidi the other day was saying that they were just kind of mulling over. It was it time to tap trees? I'm guessing with that sound effect that there must be something going on right now. That means it's getting close, right, Charlie?
Yeah, we put up a bunch of buckets this weekend and a couple more yesterday. I think we're around 25, 26 buckets and it's dripping. We're down in near the Stillwater area, so we're a little bit ahead of Grand Rapids folks, but it's definitely going. It's
Yeah,
exciting.
it's such a funny thing living up here that it's one of those things that you'd think in your head, you don't know how many people do it, but you end up getting updates on the sapping constantly. I was at hockey the other night and I know someone sapped there, so I asked them. I believe they tried to tap this past weekend and nothing was flowing up here yet. Without always asking for it, you get lots of maple syrup season updates. Even though I
Yeah,
love
that's
them.
how
I'm
I
not saying
feel
I
about
don't want them.
sports a lot of times.
It is kind of like
Yeah.
that. Yeah.
I always like kind of have an idea of like how our Minnesota teams are doing, even though I don't really follow them.
Go Frost.
Of course. That's hockey, right? Women's hockey?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Did I know a thing?
You knew
I
a
knew a
thing. You
thing. I
correctly
love it when that
you
happens.
cross over between the natural world and the athletics world.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Man, okay, yeah, Frost is a great name for a hockey team.
Is. Yeah, they really nailed it.
So now that we're in March, we are looking at migratory birds. Last time you were on the podcast, it was midwinter. You had just gone out for a Christmas bird count in like negative 25-degree weather or something insane.
Yes, definitely not a birder though. Just want to call back. We can move past that though, but just to clarify.
I do have further thoughts on that though, so we may return to that. But
Accept.
John Latimer did have a couple things to say about migratory birds that I thought we would listen to.
And we are moving into the month of March, and oh boy, is March a fun month for phenologists. I'll just give you a couple of quick ones and then get into the notes that I have over this past week. But in the month of March, we will see the emergence of the flowers on the aspens. We will see the catkins, the male flowers on the tag alders, start to distend. We will see the return of, well, the beginnings of the return of songbirds. We will have robins, red-winged blackbirds, killdeer, red-tailed hawks. Oh my, the list goes on by the end of the month. And right around the end of the month of March, the blue herons will return. And the interesting thing is, over the years, the range for the return of the robins encompasses more than 5 weeks. So the earliest I ever saw returning robins, migrating robins, was on March 6th in 2012. And the latest I ever saw returning robins was in April 15th, 2013. And 2014 was just about as late. But 5 weeks from the earliest to the latest. In the case of the blue herons, it runs from the 24th of March to the 4th of April. And that's like 10 days. And the reason for that is the blue herons are keyed to return to the north by the amount of daylight. And the robins are keyed to return to the north by how warm it is. And the daylight doesn't change year to year, but the temperature does. So that's why the robins have such a wide range. I suspect that will be on the early side for the robins this year. Maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5, maybe a week early. It could be. We'll see. I'll let you know when it happens.
He will let us know when it happens. And that's what we appreciate about John, as well as his 40 years of records.
Yeah, that is... Wow. So there's a lot I want to talk about there, because, first of all, the daylight versus the warmth thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that there was such differentiation of that nature between species. And now I'm thinking, what is the complete set of lists that, birds migrate by? Just temperature seems like the obvious one. You know, as the seasons shift, they start mm-hmm. to move. But if they're the ones that are keyed into daylight, then it's just, probably pretty similar every time. I'm wondering what else there could be.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting thing for people studying phenology, especially people who are interested in, ecological connections between species. If you have, say, warblers that are cued by sunlight, I'm making that up, they may be cued by temperature. Don't come for me, birders. I'm not a birder.
Neither am I. Neither am I.
But say there's a warbler that is cued by sunlight, and so it arrives kind of in the same 10-day window every year. But the... food that it needs, the insects, are cued by temperature. If they arrive, if the insects aren't emerging until it gets warm enough, and with climate change we see more extremes, so you see extremely warm winters or extremely cold winters, extremely late springs, extremely early springs, you have this mismatch between when the warbler arrives and when its prey is emerging and available. And so that's a major concern for a lot of those declining species, is are they going to be able to survive and find different sources of food, or will their cue somehow shift? Will they be able to adapt in this very short time scale to this phenological mismatch? Fascinating.
Yeah, what a tangled web, and everything is so interconnected. That is a really good point, that if they show up, and so they might show up at their normal time, less food based on these changes. I wonder if John, do you think he likes blue herons a little less than other birds? Because they don't, everything else is changing. And so it's more nuanced, mm-hmm. but, or are they less important to the phenological calendar if they are consistently when the daylight hits more of a certain range? Does that make sense? A philosophical question.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what that makes me think of is there's this map, this Hopkins Law map that John likes to reference, that shows how spring moves north. And the way they built that map was based on when apple trees start flowering. And this guy Hopkins in the early 1900s got a bunch of records from across the U.S. of when apple trees flower each year, and then made this map. And it says spring moves north, 10 miles, and west 30 miles or something like that. Might be the other way around.
Whoa. Goes east and west, too.
But that's all based on just apple trees. And so what would that map look like if you're looking at great blue herons, or if you're looking at robins, or, I imagine that map changing a lot based on what species you're looking at. And you wouldn't know unless you've got John Latimer's everywhere recording these.
Yeah. That is the Hopkins, what's it called?
It's John refers to it as Hopkins Law.
Okay.
It's Hopkins Theorem of something, something.
Well, I'll be looking forward to the blue herons, because up until maybe the last 5 years of my life, I think I would have said the blue heron is my favorite bird.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Changed it?
Waxwings, I guess. Waxwings, looking at birds more, or maybe being able to differentiate birds more, kind of opened up my mind. But as a kid, after you've got probably robins, crows nailed down, you can really easily tell those. But for me, that was just an early bird route. It's very visually striking. There's a little creek kind of right by my house that they would sometimes be in. So I just have a lot of memories with the blue heron, and it makes me think of home. And I'm looking forward to seeing my first one up here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm also. I have a deep affection for great blue herons. They just look so dinosaur, and they sound dinosaur-like. I actually happen to have their call here. Let me play it. You could hear that coming from a dinosaur, right?
You absolutely could. So sandhill cranes also sort of are dinosaur-y. Is that like a kind of a, do many of those long-legged, I don't know families, genuses talk, but those birds all are obviously like kind of similar. Yeah, they're broadly in the tree of birds.
Broadly.
They're sort of over by each other.
Yeah. So they all kind of branched off from the rest of the birds relatively early.
That's why.
So the like most recent common ancestor they share with, say, like a hummingbird is much further back than a hummingbird and, say, like a warbler. That kind of allows them to like keep that dinosaur-y, like reptilian almost quality a bit. And the call. I'm sure I've got a sandhill crane call here.
Just to clarify, It does also make me think, though, that loons, which I think most people would say is like more of a beautiful, less dinosaur-y thing, but loons are ancient, too.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
they diverged
a
long time ago. So back in the day, maybe there was, not everyone was like, you know, take a stock sound from the Jurassic Park film. Like,
Jurassic
maybe
Park
there were beautiful sounds back then as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, the reason we have all of these different sounds is that all of these species are trying to differentiate from each other, and that was true in the dinosaur era as well. I would love to hear dinosaur song. Can you imagine?
Dinosaur song.
We need to get, like,
yeah,
paleontologist on here to talk about dinosaur song.
Yeah.
Here's a sandhill crane.
You know, what if all these people just spent their time figuring out exactly what dinosaurs sounded like? We could all just get behind that. Like, people are like, that'd be sweet to know.
Absolutely. Like, do a little study of, like, fossilized vocal cords, you know, compare to their extant relatives. What are their vocal cords like? I believe.
How would you know that you got it right?
I remember there was, like, some meme going around, like, a decade ago where scientists had, like, copied or, like, 3D printed, not x-ray printed, 3D printed the vocal cords from like a bog body, and it can only make one sound, and it's just,
Is that true? Or is that like a meme?
I'm medium sure it's true. Hold on.
Okay, that makes sense. You know.
So off topic. Yep, researchers recreate what mummy's voice would have sounded like. But yes, apparently it is real.
Whoa, that is mind-blowing. And this is like one of a shared ancestors of a pre-humanoid kind of bog? Or is this just a
this is just a like mummy.
Of a regular human? See, that doesn't make any sense. Wouldn't they be able to talk normally?
Right? You would think so. Yeah.
Okay, so I see what you're saying. You're saying that like the science behind recreating ancient sounds is tenuous at best.
Yeah.
But, you're not saying that. Those are my words, not yours.
Yeah, I don't think we would be able to, like, get the full vocal range. But I think you could study, like, for instance, our vocal cords have a certain anatomy versus, like, a bird's vocal cords have a different. And so you can get kind of in the right genre, probably, of sounds it could make. But you wouldn't be able to, say, tell the difference between, like, a chickadee's call and a nuthatch because their vocal cords would be so similar. We could probably get to, it sounds kind of like a chickadee instead of, I don't know, a human.
Yeah, I like genres of animal noises as like a way to categorize them. And it wouldn't just be based on species. Like some of the animals that sound ridiculous, like coyotes, you know, they might be in the same genre as like a totally different kind of animal. You following?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like frogs that sound like birds.
Frogs that sound like birds. Yes. Frog bird chorus. Huh.
Frog bird chorus.
Okay.
Band name called it.
Frog bird chorus. You know, unfortunately, that band's already out there, I bet.
Anyways, here's the sandhill crane.
Here we go.
It's a good dino bird.
Yeah. That there's nothing like hearing that, even though, you know, it happens many, many times, but there's always a split second. It's never like I hear the first note and I think, oh, that's a bird. That's a sandhill crane. You hear that first note for a moment. You're like, what the? And then it
exactly.
clicks in, you know?
Right.
at least for me, I have never just gotten so used to it that it's just my first thought is, ah, Sandhill Crane somewhere.
My wife heard the first Sandhill Crane just this last weekend, so March 1st or so.
Okay. So,
they're right.
Headed north. Now, if only we had a Hopkins map for how quickly, we probably do. Someone does have this answer, but for Sandhill Cranes.
Well, the cool thing is John actually like kind of developed his own version of the Hopkins map with a DNR based on his school's reporting things like Sandhill Cranes arriving and so on. And it matched pretty well with the one based on apple blossoms. So,
wow, that is awesome. That really makes you think of like at some point. Yeah, just kind of figuring out how closely it sort of, you know, we've got these kids doing awesome like citizen science all over and just sort of at some point to see like kind of how it lines up with people who are being paid, not big bucks, but, you know,
right.
People whose like professional careers tracking these things and just, you know, see, you know, if they go toe to toe, if like Jimmy from, you know, this elementary school's got it.
Saw Sandhill Crane, reported it. And now we get to test this like weird theorem of Hopkins law.
Right on. This is the Season Watch podcast. It's good to be here. I'm Malachi Coons. I'm guesting this time. I wasn't a one and done. You know, for a little while I was worried I might be one and done, but it's good to be back here.
Absolutely
what do we got next, Charlie?
So next we have John spoke a little bit about a barred owl that was lurking near a listener's bird feeder.
Finally, a note from Joel up in Britt. Says he's got a barred owl sitting on top of an aspen outside of his bird feeder, and it's helping him to save bird seed because none of the birds want to come down and eat. Birds are pretty safe from barred owls, but if you're a vole or a mouse, yeah, it's not going to be your day. Or even a small cottontail rabbit, the barred owl would be happy to add you to its diet.
Okay, so
saving money on bird seed is one way to look at it.
That is. You know, it kind of makes you think, what am I even putting bird seed out here for in the first place? Yeah, it's an interesting trade-off. I think most people would, you know, or not most, but a lot of people would be very happy to see an owl. It's kind of an occasion and noteworthy when one is in your area roosting. But maybe if you are a songbird lover or a you might not be so happy to have a
small rodent lover, perhaps.
You know, you're right. I can't believe I just went straight to the songbirds. Small rodents have a lot of value, too, and I got to remember that.
I feel like the birders probably outnumber the, what would you call them, mousers?
Mousers
are the ones that, like, a cat that, like, kills mice.
Yeah, that's actually the opposite. That's killing more of them.
Uh-huh.
But
I feel like the birders outnumber the rodent enthusiasts.
Rodent enthusiasts? I'm trying to think of some more name for them. Some varmint, something, you know, there's got to be something there. Are those what varmints are? I don't even know what varmints are. Just saying.
I feel like varmints are any unwanted wildlife.
Oh, those were specifically unwanted ones. Okay, that was also a poor choice then. I thought it was like a certain little size of those buggers.
Oh, no, I feel like varmint is like somewhat derogatory, like shaking
Jesus.
Your fist at those varmints.
Okay.
Because I think it's like kind of like vermin, but.
Yes. Vermin, which, you know, do you ever read Redwall books?
Yes. Absolutely.
It does, you know, sort of make you wonder if Brian Jocks or Brian Jakes, whatever his, however you say his last name. You know, he just said, if you're a stoat, you're evil.
Right.
You know, there was no room. There was no wiggle
weasel.
Room. There was no like nuance in people's morality. If you were a varmint, for lack of a better word, he just kind of set you on a path of destruction, looting, and pillaging.
Yeah. And there was, for those of you who don't know, Redwall was a long series of books that all featured, like, all of the mice and, like, little field mice and badgers and stuff were all very much the good guys. And then you had, like, stoats and rats that were the bad guys.
Ferrets and weasels.
Yep.
Bad.
And there was even one book where, like, there was this orphaned weasel, sorry, stoat, that they, like, brought into Redwall and tried to raise as a good little boy and, like, didn't turn out to be a good little boy. Like, he even, like, posited the ability, like, maybe it's just, maybe they're redeemable. And he was like, no, It's like, come on. Mm. Let's have some love for our weasels.
Yeah. I like to think that if he were still alive today, honestly, I don't even know. I hope he's... maybe he is alive, actually. But I think at the time, he probably wasn't. He was like, I'm writing a children's book, you know? And the forces of good and the forces of evil. That now, he might have a more nuanced take on the battles of a, you know, mouse and weasel-heavy society.
I would hope so.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, he did pass in 2011.
2011, okay. Yeah, and for folks, this is like my childhood. I probably learned more... Well, I didn't actually learn useful things about the animals, but just more terms for animals from those books than, like, a stoat. I would not know what a stoat was if it wasn't for that show.
Redwall books.
The Redwall books. I wonder what John Latimer thinks of Redwall books.
I wonder if he's ever met the Redwall. Well, I bet his kids, because he's about the same age as my dad, so I assume that I'm about the same age as his kids. So his kids might have grown up in the Redwall era.
Yeah. I think a lot of people maybe know that one book or at least have seen it. Then not everyone, like I did, read all like 42, the 42
series.
Other ones that were like a different evil animal and a different heroic animal every time.
Yep. No wonder we get along.
I know. This is really tying a lot of things together. I haven't thought about Redwall in a long time. But
right.
I once had a family of Merlins take up roost at the top of a pine tree in my backyard and noticed a significant decline in other birds that showed up. And so I was already angry with the Merlins because they're noisy as all heck. So I had already given up on them before. I was ready for them to move on. This is an old house in Duluth. And let me tell you, that place was not heat tight. And it also did not keep Merlin sounds out. It just would wake you in the morning, like piercing through. Anyways, I was already fed up with it. But I could tell that, you know, the other birds that I was looking for, they're not just going to walk out, fly out in no man's land and get taken out. They are
right.
They're thinking about those things.
Yeah, and like a barred owl shouldn't be any threat to a songbird. They're not particularly fast or agile flyers, but a Merlin makes its whole living on those songbirds. So yeah, I can imagine that would not be great for the rest of your birding.
Does a barred
hopefully a little cool?
Yeah.
Could you see like the Merlin nest? Could you see in at all?
Couldn't see in. It was too high, but you could always see the pair. And they just kept kind of dive bombing the whole area. And I did enjoy it. It was a very nice experience to have for kind of a whole season. But I do wonder, so does a barred owl, are they known to take out a lot of birds? Or more of an opportunist?
More of an opportunist. It's a great horned owl that I think is more of a problem, like particularly for crows. It'll come in and snatch them in the middle of the night, which is why they have like such a fight on sight relationship. But barred owls, I'm not entirely sure if they have, hold on. The resource that I always go to when I'm like trying to look for these things is a website called Birds of the World. It's run by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And like, if they had a Birds of the World for not just birds, I would be so happy because it tells you everything you want to know, like the sounds they make and what they mean.
I bet there's a similar
diet, how they forage. What were you saying?
I would imagine there's like a Fish of the World equivalent site. People seem to really care about fish. Mm-hmm. Is that what you were thinking of, like, for all species?
Yes, absolutely. And like plants. Because a lot of times I'm looking for something like, you know, the weird noises red foxes make during mating season.
Yes.
Yes. I'm looking for that sound. And like, is this the sound that means mating or is this just like the weird sounds that they make?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You cannot find that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas if you pull up a bird on this site, it's like, this is the sound the bird makes when it does X, Y, Z. And if it's this season, it'll make this sound. And if the sun is at this level, it'll make this sound. Yeah, they do have that stuff.
So useful.
Very figured out.
Okay. Small mammals. Okay, so mammals are 75%. Of a barred owl's diet. Birds are about 10%, amphibians about 5%, insects and spiders about 5%, crayfish like 3%, and fish.
Crayfish?
Percent and a half. And you then know, less than a percent each of reptiles, snails, and slugs. And I like obviously rounded a lot of that, so it's not going to add up to 100. that's fascinating. I hadn't really thought about insects and spiders. or crayfish as 3% of a barred owl's diet?
In my head, I would never imagine an owl battling even that many like amphibians, to be honest. But crayfish. I don't know nearly enough about crayfish. Do they ever come out of the water? Is the barred owl going into the water?
Let me pull this up.
These are questions. The questions crayfish. That you need to know. And if I was out walking one day and I saw a barred owl go into a creek and get a crayfish, I would. Yeah. I might just call it. I might stop looking at nature. Like,
I have seen crayfish like crossing a road and stuff.
It's a joke there somewhere.
Why did the crayfish cross the road? Get eaten by a barred owl.
Exactly. Boom.
This has been marvelously silly, but I feel like we do need to get in one more little recording here from the Aurora Wasekoni community of learners in Bemidji.
Hello, welcome to the Phenology Report for Wednesday, February 25th. Let's start with the weather notices. There's been lots of melting ice and snow that due to freeze and thaw cycles, it keeps coming back.
Now to plants. Buds have been noticed on trees. There has also been some noticed dogwood, really pretty red dogwood branches.
Now to animals. We have noticed lots of deer, some dead, some alive, and some losing their antlers. We noticed the vole tunnels in the snow. A lone wolf has been spotted near a logging site. We guessed her den has been destroyed. She has been pacing for about a week now. We have spotted and heard lots of birds, including raven, chickadee, eagle, red-winged blackbird, crow, turkey, magpie, and dark-eyed juncos.
One person saw squirrels in their trash. Another person heard lots of coyotes. We also have seen rabbits.
That's all for now. Thanks for listening. Bye.
I love those kids' voices. I thought it was super fascinating they like saw a red-winged or heard a red-winged blackbird up in Bemidji because they haven't gotten here yet.
Yes, I have not seen or heard one. Yeah, they zoomed right by. Pretty soon they will be everywhere. They'll be like our main bird here.
Right? Yeah. I mean, sometimes you get like weird ones that get, blown in by a storm. They're like vagrants, I think they're called in the birding world.
Okay.
Something like that.
Well, that would, yeah. Yeah, that is a funny, there's a lot to unpack there. These vagrant birds showing up.
Right.
But we did have, I don't know what day that was and when that was recorded, but we did have some kind of tremendous winds, had some strange winds over the last little while. There was, wind that made a lot of snow on the North Shore that was coming pretty much straight out of the east. And then the other day it was really, really gusty here too and really windy. So if that could.
Maybe it got blown in by a weird storm. And also, I don't know, do you use the Merlin bird sound ID app thing?
Yes, I do.
Words?
Yep.
Okay.
I do.
For listeners who don't use it, get it. It is so useful. It will just listen through your phone's microphone and like help you identify the birds that you're hearing, which is basically everything I know about birding by ear is pretty much thanks to Merlin. But it does occasionally get things wrong. And so I wonder whether that was a miscue from Merlin.
I will be totally honest. This is a bit of a humble brag here, but I have convinced Merlin that I was a loon before. So I don't know.
That is great.
So I don't really know how much like that's not really inspiring, I guess, to show that it's always but just had to plug my loon call in there for a little bit. That did happen once. It took me a while, like 10 minutes. I was sitting on a dock and I did get it to think I was a loon, but maybe there was a loon somewhere else. So faint that I didn't even notice, and maybe it actually faked me out. Are you familiar with
Either way, it makes me really happy to picture you sitting there trying to get a loon call on Merlin for 10 minutes.
I usually try and do it like once a year. I don't know why. There's always one moment where I'm like, let's see if I still got it. Or let's see if they've upgraded their coding, I guess, so that humans can't fool them anymore. My dad uses something called the Haiku Box. Are you familiar with the Haiku Box?
I am not.
It needs to be, I think it needs to have some sort of Wi-Fi connection. So like it's not too far away from their house and they're kind of surrounded by some woods. But it is a pretty cool product and he's always showing me. He's like, yeah, back home right now, this is what the thing's hearing. And I'm like, come on, live in the present, Dad, But
Wait, so it like, rec-
This thing is constantly recording at their house. So if you're ever walking around my parents' house, don't say mean things about people.
Surveillance state.
You know, it is. Since I'm not into the surveillance state and like I don't really want to have a Ring camera, I should just double check with him. Like, does this stuff auto delete or like does it only go for birds? That's a whole other question. We're not going to get in. Although I would love to hear your thoughts on the surveillance state, but maybe another time. But anyway.
Well, think about the wildlife in the surveillance state. We've got these cameras on these bald eagle nests live streaming so we can watch them raise their little babies. Anyways.
That is a good point. I love to watch those.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Yeah,
I love watching those.
Yeah. You know, if something net raises awareness, then I'm for it. But yeah. Enough with the door cameras. That's another whole
Haiku bot.
Haiku box. Yeah, yeah.
Haiku
okay,
box?
So,
box.
Yep, all one word. And it is really cool. It's really neat. It's like specifically for birds. And so, and then like, you know, it kind of keeps track of like, these are like total year stuff, like total year stats. And so, yeah, it's just out there in the woods behind their house. And I think it needs a Wi-Fi connection. I think my dad got it for like Father's Day or something or his birthday. And he was thrilled. And it's a pretty cool device. Yeah. And then obviously tied into your phone somehow. But I don't know where I was going with this. I should try.
Well, we were talking about Merlin and fun apps.
I think Merlin's pretty reliable.
Yeah.
Is my thought. It's
way better than my ear, you know.
Yeah.
And as long as you don't take everything that it says as like the truth, you know, from the Lord Birders above, you know, view it with a little skepticism.
Yeah.
It'll point you in the right direction.
Yeah. If you've ever looked at like a sound form in its sort of, you know, kind of like X and Y axis display, which sometimes we end up doing for the
spectrograms.
Yeah. So sometimes we end up looking at those kind of things for like the work we do. And often we look at like waves of our audio. Once I started to look at those a lot more in my life, I think I got how Merlin works a little bit more because it is such like a chaotic pattern that I guess if I accept that like fingerprinting technology is real, I sort of accept that like when it hears something, it can just go into this display and like look for a unique
thing. Pattern.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah. And again, Cornell Lab of Ornithology has this great training on looking at spectrograms and like how to differentiate bird calls, which has been really helpful for me because I don't have a great ear. And so seeing the calls visually helps me learn it way better than just hearing it. Even if I hear it like multiple times, just seeing it on the little spectrogram, I'm like, oh, now I understand what this pattern is.
What this pattern is? Yeah.
Yeah.
On that topic.
American robins. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, well, on that topic, and before we wrap up, I just remembered something I wanted to say that I had forgotten from the start of this, which was that the killdeer are going to be coming back. Now, some of those bird call devices are, I don't think they help people very much. And a killdeer is supposedly what it sounds like, right? Like the name. And I think it's stupid.
Really?
I'm just going to throw
I have the opposite take.
I'm going to throw that out into the ether, and you tell me what your thoughts are. You think it sounds like it's saying, killdeer, killdeer.
Killdeer, killdeer. Mm. Hold on, I've got it. I've got a recording right here. Let's play it.
We'll let the people decide. I guess I don't.
Okay.
I know that those things are never as hard and fast as you want them to be, but. And I know there's two notes. I guess in my head, I just hear two notes. And is that enough to say, like, you can say any other word that has two syllables in it?
Chopstick, chopstick. Not quite.
No.
Because I think...
What?
Kill deer, like, the E in deer, I think, works.
Okay. Mm. Well, you know, we'll agree to disagree on this one.
Okay.
It's not as, like, like cardinal car alarm.
The American... Uh-huh.
That one's cardinal. Good. Cardinal car alarm.
Yep.
Kind of sounds like a car alarm. Mm-hmm. What are you going to say, American Robin?
Are you any good at identifying the American Robin by ear?
No. No, robins are perpetually one of
me
those
either.
They're perpetually one of those birds that like I like if I'm with someone who's more of a birder and you're like looking for things, like there's a moment where I like sort of like feel the need to find out what bird is doing this and they are all like it's obviously a robin. You know?
yeah, that's what happens to me every time. And I'm like, how? I obviously you hear them all the time, but they, I don't know if it's their call is so varied or it just sounds a lot like other birds, but I can never get the American robin call down.
Yeah.
Also, and they have one of my favorite scientific names, which is just a cruel name to give to this bird, Turdus migratorius. Rude. Turdus is from the Latin, which means thrush, but in the Germanic language, a turd is, you know, a turd. So it's just an unfortunate way that two languages slam together.
Yeah.
But Turdus migratorius for this, like, pretty bird that sings so nicely.
I agree. If we were to just redo all bird names, I think we should redo mm-hmm. robin. Because it's yeah. not a robin. Or, like, it's not a European robin. Yeah, it's a thrush, yeah. right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they kind of sound like evening grosbeaks, too. I think that one throws me off. Is that the one that John says is like a it's like a robin that can sing? Not evening grosbeaks.
Oh, you're thinking about the rose-breasted.
Rose-breasted grosbeaks. So, like, there's a lot of overlap yeah. in those ones. And I'm not really able to tell, like, this one sounds like another bird. It just sounds better.
Yeah.
It's kind of right? abstract.
It's a friend. It's a feathered friend up there. We like it. If I need to know exactly which one, I'm going to turn on Merlin or I'm going to go ask a smarter birder friend. Birders. I figured out the reason I don't like to call myself a birder. It's because it's too restrictive. I'm not just excited about birds. If I'm a birder, then I'm also a herpetologist and a mammalogist and a botanist. And Boom. Then I get the broad and shallow pool is my knowledge.
Yes.
You know?
To know a little bit about a lot.
Yeah.
A jack of all trades, like, master of none.
Exactly. I feel like birders are more of like a narrower, deeper pool of knowledge.
A narrower, deeper than pool. I there can we go. Claim. We have. Yep. Returned full circle here on the Season Watch good. Podcast hosted by two definitely non-birders.
We're going to get yelled at by Pam Perry for that one, but yes. yeah. And this week we heard from a lot of wonderful people, including our friend John Latimer. The student report was from the Aurora Wasakoni community of learners in Bemidji. Jonathan Jungsma was the person who recorded the red-winged blackbird and the killdeer and the American robin. Thank you. Red-tailed hawk was from Christopher McPherson, and the great blue heron was from Michael Herbin. All of those were from Zeno Canto. So thank you, Citizen Scientists. And
yes.
Of course, all of these originally aired on KEXE. Please send us your observations through SpeakPipe, especially now that spring is starting. I'm so excited. I want to learn everything about what people are up to, what they're seeing when you started your maple tapping, if you do that. Whether you use the term sugar bush or not, because I have mixed feelings about it, keep me posted.